This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. Justice Harry Blackmun's newly released papers reveal a meticulous note-taker. During his 24-year tenure on the Supreme Court, Blackmun took notes about everything, from the discussions in the justices' secret conferences to the hairstyles of the lawyers who appeared in court. It's rare for the public to get such an insider's view of the Supreme Court. NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg was the only broadcast reporter permitted to examine the voluminous Blackmun papers in advance of their release. Here's another in her series of reports.
The Blackmun files and his 38-hour oral history provide all kinds of fascinating behind-the-scenes glimpses of life in Washington, beginning with Blackmun's nomination to the Supreme Court. Blackmun always called himself Old Number 3, a reference to the fact that President Nixon's two previous appointees had been rejected by the Senate. Remarkably, when Blackmun was first summoned to Washington for his Justice Department interview, the man who grilled him was none other than Assistant Attorney General William Rehnquist, later to be appointed to the court himself. When Blackmun later obtained his Justice Department file, he found a Rehnquist memo declaring that Blackmun's writing, while not top-notch, covered the bases. Once the two men were on the court together, Blackmun, as he observed in his oral history, often made a joke of Rehnquist's screening.
When he and I disagree, and his view does not prevail in the court, I can't resist saying you made a mistake in approving me back in 1970.
When it came to the next step in the nomination process, meeting President Nixon, Blackmun's description sounds like something out of a Woody Allen movie, with Blackmun in the Woody Allen role. As Blackmun tells the story, he was ushered into the Oval Office, where Attorney General John Mitchell formally recommended to the president that the Minnesotan be appointed. The conversation took place, said Blackmun, as if he were invisible.
I didn't say anything. I just sat there, and they were good enough to offer me a cup of coffee, which I accepted. I was glad to have a free cup of coffee, I guess.
The Attorney General, Blackmun remembered, was soon called out of the room, and President Nixon went over to the Rose Garden window, telling Blackmun to come over here.
So I went over, and we looked out, and he asked a couple of questions, among which, I'll never forget this, he said, "What kind of a woman is Mrs. Blackmun?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "She will be wooed by the Georgetown crowd. Can she withstand that kind of wooing?" I said, "I thought she could." Then we went back and sat down. He turned to me and he said, "Judge, what are you worth? How many dollars do you have?" Which kind of annoyed me at the time. I didn't know this was a factor to be considered.
Mr. Nixon, apparently sensing Blackmun's discomfort, gave him what Blackmun called a little lecture about how broke he'd been when he left the vice presidency. Just 4 years later, Nixon's fate was in the hands of Blackmun and the other justices of the Supreme Court. The Watergate defendants were about to go on trial, and Mr. Nixon, named an unindicted co-conspirator in the Watergate cover-up indictment and facing impeachment proceedings in the House, was fighting a court order to turn over White House-recorded conversations relating to the Watergate prosecution. The order had been issued by Judge John Sirica, the judge in charge of the Watergate case, and with the Nixon administration seeking reversal in the appeals court, the special prosecutor decided to leapfrog over the Court of Appeals and go directly to the Supreme Court with a request for expedited resolution of the question. President Nixon objected.
"Even though President Nixon has often said he wants a speedy resolution of Watergate, in this case he does not want to go directly to the Supreme Court."
The question of whether to expedite reached the Supreme Court in May 1974. On May 28th, Associate Justice William Rehnquist wrote to Chief Justice Burger, advising him that he would disqualify himself from participating in the case. 3 days later, the justices met in conference. Though much has been written about the case based on the papers of the late Justices Thurgood Marshall and Lewis Powell, Blackmun's note-taking adds rich new detail. On the first vote to expedite, the special prosecutor lost. There were only three votes to hear the case— Justices Brennan, Stewart, and Marshall. Blackmun recorded the liberal Justice William O. Douglas saying that the appeals court would act quickly, quote, making it unnecessary for the Supreme Court to act now. But fellow liberal William Brennan disagreed forcefully, saying the nation would not understand waiting. The claim of executive privilege, he argued, should not be decided by the president himself. Justice Potter Stewart agreed, saying, quote, "The judiciary, not the executive, decides." The next justice to speak, Byron White, is recorded as being reluctant. He conceded he was tempted to vote in favor of hearing the case right away, since he viewed the president's position as, quote, "so lacking in merit," but on balance, he thought the court should wait. Justice Thurgood Marshall sided with Brennan, saying the court could not walk away from the case. Justice Lewis Powell initially voiced hesitation, saying the court should have the benefit of a decision from the appeals court. But as the conversation progressed, he conceded, "The country is in a crisis, and there might be a, quote, loss of public confidence if the court failed to act." Chief Justice Warren Burger worried about the court being drawn into the vortex of this hysteria, and he voiced his opinion that the court had been bums rushed into jumping too quickly into the Pentagon Papers case 3 years earlier. The conversation continued for several hours. There was a second vote. This time, those who wanted the court to expedite the case carried the day. Only Justices Blackmun and White dissented. Blackmun was worried about the product of a hurried opinion. The conference ended at 2:06 p.m.
The Supreme Court moved with unusual speed today to set up a hearing.
On July 8th, the court heard arguments in the case. The questioning was spirited, as in this exchange between Justice Powell and Nixon lawyer James St. Clair.
Let us assume that the conversations we're talking about here today did involve a criminal conspiracy. Would you still be asserting an absolute privilege?
Yes, quite clearly.
What public interest is there in preserving secrecy with respect to a criminal conspiracy?
The answer, sir, is a criminal conspiracy is criminal only after it's proven to be criminal. And we're not at that point yet.
The next morning, the justices met in conference. They were in general agreement. The president would have to turn over his tapes. There was no executive privilege for evidence in a criminal case. The vote against President Nixon was unanimous, and Chief Justice Burger assigned himself to write the opinion. But as he began circulating sections of his draft, the other members of the court became alarmed at what they considered the poor quality of the draft and the holes the chief was leaving that might allow the president to avoid compliance. Blackmun looked at Berger's first section reciting the facts of the case and wrote in the margin, "Not a good opening sentence." Soon, a cabal of sorts developed to write substitute sections, and Blackmun agreed to write the substitute on the facts. In the end, after considerable resistance, Burger agreed to incorporate much of the substitutions. As Blackmun put it in his oral history,
"It was certainly not an easy situation under which to try to get a most important opinion out, and of course it happened that his chambers didn't. The others took over in large part."
On July 24th, the court ordered the president to turn over his tapes, and 17 days later, President Nixon resigned. At the court, the difficulty over writing the opinion appears to have been the last straw in an already strained relationship between Burger and Blackmun. The two had been boyhood friends, and Blackmun had been best man at Burger's wedding.
"It was a situation that was built for resentments and misunderstandings. It certainly developed them."
Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
Nina's previous reports are at npr.org. The series was edited by Barbara Campbell and produced by Ann Hawk, with editorial assistance from Noah Falk and engineering by Josh Rogerson.